Welcome to Tales of Wonder. I'm Martel. And this week's story is The Seven Golden Peahens, a Servian folktale. There was once a king who had three sons, and he had also a golden apple tree that bore nothing but golden apples, and this tree he loved as though it had been his daughter. The king was never able, however, to have any of the fruit it bore, for no sooner were the apples ripe than they would disappear in the night, and this in spite of a guard being set around the garden to watch it and see that no one entered in. One time, the eldest prince came to the king and asked to be allowed to keep watch over the tree that night. "And if I do," said he, "I promise you that nothing shall be allowed to approach it, not even the smallest sparrow." The king consented to this. So that evening the prince took his sword and went out into the garden to mount guard over the tree. Scarcely had it become dark when he heard a sound of wings beating through the air. And the sound made him so drowsy that his eyelids weighed like lead, and he fell into a deep sleep. When he awoke, it was morning, and all the apples were gone from the tree. The prince returned to the palace and was obliged to confess to the king that he had slept all the night through. The king was very angry, but the second son said, "My father, allow me to keep watch over the tree the next time, and I promise you I will do better than my brother, for I will not so much as close my eyes until daybreak." The king was willing, so when evening came, the second son took his sword and went into the garden to watch the tree as his brother had done before him. Hardly was it dark before he heard the sound of wings, and then in spite of himself his eyes closed, and he fell into a deep sleep. He never stirred till daylight, and when he sat up and looked about him, every apple was gone. After this, it was the turn of the third son to watch the tree, but he was a very wise prince. He had listened to all his brothers had to say about the sound of wings they had heard and how the sound had put them to sleep, and before he went into the garden, he stuffed his ears with cotton so that he could hear nothing. Then he placed himself near the tree and began his watch. As soon as it was dark, the sound of beating wings began, and the sound drew nearer and nearer, but the prince did not hear it because of the cotton in his ears. Then a light appeared in the sky, and seven golden peahens flew into the garden. They shone so that all the place was lit up as though by the light of day. Six of the peahens settled on the branches of the apple tree and began to shake down the apples, but the seventh changed into the most beautiful princess the prince had ever seen in all his life. Her hair was like a golden cloud about her. Her eyes were as blue as the sky. And from head to foot, she was dressed all in cloth of gold. She began to gather up the fruit that the others shook down to her. And for a while, the prince could neither stir nor speak for wonder of her beauty. Then he took the cotton from his ears and went over to her and began to talk to her and ask her who she was. At first, when the princess saw him, she was frightened. But presently she told him that she and the six peahens were the daughters of a king who lived far away, and that they had flown over seven mountains and over seven seas, all for the love of the golden apples. She also told him that by day she and her sisters lived in a beautiful pleasure palace their father had built for them, But when night came, they changed themselves into peahens and flew about the world wherever they chose. After a while, the day began to break, and then the princess changed herself into a peahen again, and she and her sisters flew away. But she left with the prince 3 of the golden apples she had gathered. The prince returned to the palace and gave the apples to his father, and the king was delighted at the sight of them.
"And did you find out who it is that steals them?" he asked.
Instead of answering him, the prince managed to put him off. And the next night he said he would watch in the garden again. Then the same thing happened. He stopped his ears with cotton. The 7 peahens arrived, and 6 alighted in the tree. But the 7th became a beautiful princess and came across the garden to him. Then the prince unstopped his ears, and they talked together until daybreak, when she flew away with her sisters. And this time, as before, she left 3 of the apples with him. As soon as it was morning, the prince carried the apples to his father. And now, whether or no, the king would have him say who it was who came into the garden every night to steal the fruit. The prince was obliged to tell his story. But when he said it was 7 golden peahens that stole the apples, and that they were the daughters of a great king, his father would scarcely believe him. The brothers, too, laughed him to scorn, for they were very jealous of him.
"This is a strange story," they cried, "and it certainly cannot be true. Either you are trying to deceive us, or you fell asleep and dreamed it all."
"It is certainly true," answered the youngest brother, "and there are the 3 golden apples to prove it."
"They are no proof," answered the others. "If you would have us believe you, keep watch in the garden again tonight. And when the princess comes, cut a lock of her golden hair and keep it to show us. When we see that, then we will believe you."
At first, the prince would not consent to do this. But they were so urgent that he finally agreed. And when he went into the garden, he took a pair of sharp scissors with him. After a time, the golden peahens flew into the garden, and after the youngest sister had changed into a princess, she and the prince talked together all night. When she was about to go, the prince managed, without being seen, to take hold of a lock of her hair and cut it off. No sooner had he done this, however, than the princess gave a sorrowful cry.
"Alas! Alas!" said she, "if you had only been patient for a little while longer, all would have gone well. Now I must go away forever, and you will never see me again unless you journey over the 7 seas and over the 7 mountains to seek me."
Then she changed into a peahen and flew away with the others. The prince was filled with despair at the thought that he had lost her, for he loved her so well that he did not know how he could live without her. In the morning, his father and brothers came to seek him in the garden, and when they saw the lock of golden hair, they were obliged to believe him, and they could not wonder enough. But the young prince saddled his horse and set out in search of his princess. On he went and on he went, and everywhere he rode, he asked those he met whether they had seen 7 golden peahens. But no one could tell him anything about them. At last, after he had journeyed over 7 mountains and over 7 seas, he came to a palace that stood beside a lake. And in this palace lived an enchantress queen and her daughter. He knocked at the door, and when the queen came to see who was there, he once more asked whether she could tell him anything of the 7 golden peahens who were the daughters of a king.
"Oh, yes, that I can," answered the queen, "and if you are in search of them, you have not much further to go. Every morning they come to bathe in this lake, and anyone who watches them can see them."
When the prince heard this, he was filled with joy and would have set out for the lake at once. But the queen, seeing how young and handsome he was, begged him to come in and rest for a while.
"Why do you follow after those 7 princesses?" she asked. "My daughter is a princess too, and a beautiful girl. If you can take a fancy to her, you shall marry her and live here, and after I die, this palace and all that is in it shall be yours."
The prince, however, would not listen to this, for he loved the golden peahen princess with all his heart, and her alone would he marry. When the queen found out that he was not to be persuaded, she pretended to fall in with his wishes.
"Very well," said she, "it shall be as you desire. But let me send someone with you to show you the way to the lake."
The prince thanked her, and she called a servant to go with him. But before they set out, she took the servant aside and gave him privately a small pair of bellows.
"When you reach the lake," said she, "take an opportunity to get behind the prince and blow upon the back of his neck with these bellows. If you do this, I will reward you well."
The servant promised to obey her, and then he and the prince set out together. When they reached the shore, the prince sat down on some rocks to watch for the peahens, but the servant got back of him and blew upon his neck with the bellows, and immediately the prince fell asleep. Presently there was a light in the sky, and the 7 golden peahens came flying and alighted upon the borders of the lake. 6 of them began to bathe themselves in its waters, but the 7th one changed into a princess. She came over to the prince and began to call to him and caress him, but she could not awaken him from his sleep. After a time the peahens came up from the water, and the princess said to the servant, "Tell your master when he awakens twice more, I will come, but never again." Then she and the others all flew away together. When the prince awoke and found that the princess had been there and tried in vain to awaken him, he was ready to die with grief and disappointment. However, she would return the next day, and he determined that he would be there watching for her, and that this time he would not by any means allow himself to fall asleep. So the next morning he hurried down to the lake again, and the servant went with him, but before they left the castle, the queen gave the servant the pair of bellows and bade him blow upon the back of the prince's neck when he was not aware of it. They reached the lake, and the prince would not sit down, for he feared he might fall asleep again. But the servant managed to get back of him and blow upon his neck with the bellows. Then, in spite of himself, the prince sank down in a deep sleep. Presently, the peahens came flying, and as before, the youngest sister came over to the prince and began to call and caress him, but he still slept on in spite of her. Then she turned to the servant and said to him, "Tell your master when he awakens that once more will I come, and never again. But unless he cuts the head of the nail from the body, he will never see me." When the prince awoke and heard the message the princess had left, he understood that the servant had deceived him, and that the princess meant unless he destroyed the servant, he would never find her. So the next day, when they started out together, the prince took a sharp sword with him. He waited until they were out of sight of the castle, and then he turned and cut the servant's head from his shoulders and went on down alone to the lake. He had not been there long when he saw a light and heard the 7 peahens coming. No sooner had they alighted than the 7th one changed into the beautiful princess. When she saw that the prince was awake and watching for her, she was overcome with joy.
"Now we shall never be parted again," she said, "but you shall go to our palace with me and be my own dear husband."
Then she changed him into a golden peacock, and the 6 pea hens came up from the water, and they all flew away together. On and on they went, until they came to the pleasure palace the king had built for his daughters. And there the golden peacock was changed back into a prince, and the pea hens became 7 princesses. The prince was married to the youngest one amidst great rejoicings, and they all lived there happily together. Everything went joyfully for 7 months. And then the princess came to the prince and said,
"My dear husband, the time has now come when my sisters and I must go pay a visit to the king, our father. You cannot go with us, but if you will obey what I am about to tell you, all will go well. We will be away for 3 days, and during that time the palace and all that is in it will be yours. You may go wherever you please, except into the 3rd cellar that is over beyond the others. There you must not go, for if you do, some terrible misfortune will certainly come upon both of us." The prince promised that all should be as she wished, and then she and her sisters flew away together, leaving him alone. For the 1st day, the prince did not go near the cellar and scarcely thought of it. The 2nd day, he looked to see where it was, and when he came to the door, it was so heavily chained and bolted that he could not but wonder what was back of it. And on the 3rd day, he could think of nothing but the cellar and what was in it. At last, he felt that, come what might, he must see what treasure it was that was kept locked away behind that door. He went down to it again and began to unfasten the bolts and bars. The last one fell, and he opened the door and stepped inside and looked about him. There was nothing there to see, but a great chest with holes bored in the lid and bound about with 9 bands of iron. The prince stared and wondered, and while he still stood there, he heard a groaning sound from within the chest. And a voice cried,
"Brother, for the love of mercy, give me some water to wet my poor mouth."
The prince was always pitiful towards those in trouble, and as soon as he heard this, without stopping to inquire what was inside of the chest, he ran and fetched a cup of water and poured it through one of the holes. Scarcely had he done this before there was a straining sound, and 3 of the iron bands burst asunder.
"Brother, that was scarcely enough to wet my mouth," said the voice inside. "For the love of mercy, give me another cup of water to cool my throat."
The prince ran and fetched the water and poured it through the hole in the lid. And now 3 more of the iron bands burst asunder.
"More water, brother, more, for the love of mercy," cried the voice. "That still is not enough to quench my thirst."
The prince fetched a 3rd cup of water and poured it into the chest. And now, with a sound like thunder, the last of the iron bands were broken, and out from the chest flew a great green dragon. It flew up through the cellars and out of the castle, and the prince ran after it. The 7 princesses were just coming home, and without even stopping for a moment, the dragon caught up the youngest one in his claws and flew away with her, and the prince still ran after them, shouting like one distracted. Even after the dragon had disappeared over the mountains, the prince ran on, and when he could no longer run, he walked. On and on he went. And after a while he came to a stream, and in a hole near it lay a small fish gasping for breath.
"Brother," it cried, "for the love of mercy, put me back in the water, but first take one of my scales, and if you are ever in need, rub it and call upon me, and I may be able to help you."
The prince stooped and took up the fish, but before he put it back in the water, he took from it a tiny scale as it had bade him. This scale he wrapped carefully in his handkerchief, and journeyed on again, leaving the fish happy at being again in the stream. Later on he came to a forest, and under some bushes lay a fox, whining to itself with its paw caught in a trap.
"Brother," it called to the prince as soon as it saw him, "for the love of mercy, open this trap and let me go free. It may be that I may succor you in time of need."
The prince was sorry for the poor animal and managed to pry open the trap. The fox thanked him, and before it ran away, it told him to pull 3 hairs from its tail.
"If you are ever in need, rub those hairs and call upon me," it said, "and wherever I am, I will hear you and come to help you."
The prince thanked him and journeyed on, and in the depths of the forest, he came upon a wolf, which was caught by a rock that had fallen on its paw.
"Help, brother, for the love of mercy," cried the wolf.
The prince managed to roll away the rock, and when the wolf found it was free, it gave him 3 hairs from its tail.
"If you are ever in need, rub these hairs and call upon me," he said, "and wherever I am, I will come and help you."
The prince thanked him and journeyed on, and before long he came out of the forest and saw before him a great castle that stood upon a mountain. While he stood there looking at it, the gate opened and out rode the dragon on a great coal-black horse. Then the prince knew that this was the place he was in search of. He waited until the dragon had disappeared, and then he went up to the castle and entered it. And the very first person he saw was his own dear wife, sitting alone and weeping. As soon as she saw him, she jumped up and ran into his arms, and after they had kissed and caressed each other, they began to plan how they could escape. Out in the stable was another horse, and this the prince saddled. He mounted upon it and took the princess up before him, and then they rode down the mountain and away as fast as they could go. It was not until evening that the dragon returned to the castle, but as soon as he came in and found the princess was gone, he knew what had happened and that she had ridden away with the prince. Then he took counsel with his coal-black horse and asked it, "Shall we ride after them at once, or shall we eat and drink first?"
"Let us eat and drink first," answered the horse, "for even after that we can easily catch up with them."
So the dragon sat down and ate and drank, and then he mounted his steed and rode after the runaways. He soon caught up with them, and took the princess from the prince and set her on his own horse in front of him.
"This one time I will spare you," he said to the prince, "because you had mercy upon me when I was a prisoner in the cellar. But if you ever come to my castle again, I will certainly destroy you."
Then he rode back home again faster than the wind, carrying the princess with him. The prince waited until he was out of sight, and then he turned the horse loose and started back toward the castle, for even the dragon's threat could not keep him away from his dear princess. When he had come within sight of the castle again, he hid himself and waited until the next day, when the dragon had ridden away. Then he went up to the castle and hunted through the rooms until he found the princess. When she saw him, she began to tremble with fear and wring her hands.
"Why have you returned?" she cried. Do you not remember that if the dragon finds you here, he will tear you to pieces?
Listen, dear one, said the prince. I will hide myself behind the curtains. And when the dragon comes home, you must find out from him where he got his coal-black steed. For I can easily see that unless we find a match to it, we will never be able to escape from him.
This the princess agreed to do, and they talked together until they heard the dragon returning, and then the prince hid himself back behind the curtains.
When the dragon came in, the princess pretended to be very glad to see him, and at this he was delighted, for always before she had met him with tears and reproaches. After a time she said,
"That is a very wonderful horse that you have. Do you suppose there is another one like it in all the world?"
"Yes," said the dragon, "there is one and only one, and that is the brother of my steed."
The princess asked him where this wonderful steed was to be found, and the dragon told her it belonged to the old gray woman who had but one eye and lived at such and such a place.
"She has 12 beautiful horses standing in her stable," the dragon went on, "but this steed is none of them. It is the lean and sorry nag that is crowded away in the furthest stall, and no one to look at it would think it worth anything, but all the same it is the brother of my horse, and to the full as good as he is."
"And would it be possible for anyone to get that horse?" asked the princess.
"Possible, but difficult. If anyone serves the old gray woman for 3 days and during that time is able to fulfill her bidding, he will be able to ask his own reward and she cannot refuse him. In that way, he can gain possession of that horse, and in no other."
The prince heard all this behind the curtain where he was hidden, and after a time when the dragon had gone to sleep, he stole out and set forth in search of the old gray woman who had but one eye. He went on, and after a while he came to the house, and there was the old gray woman herself looking out of the window. He knocked at the door, and when she opened it, he asked whether he might take service with her.
"Yes, you may," answered the old gray woman, "for I am in need of a stout lad to drive my black mare out to the pasture and keep her from running away. If you can do this for 3 days, you may ask what reward you choose, and it shall be yours. But if you are not able to bring her home every evening, your head shall be cut from your shoulders and set upon a stake."
The prince agreed to this bargain, and the next morning, as soon as it was light, he drove the black mare out to the pasture. Before they started, however, the woman went to the black mare's stall and whispered in her ear,
"Today you must change yourself into a fish and hide down in the stream, for there the lad will never be able to find you."
When the prince reached the pasture with the mare, he determined to sit upon her back all day, for if he did that, he was sure she could never escape from him. He sat there for a long time, but he grew drowsier and drowsier, and at last he fell asleep. When he awoke, he was seated on a log of wood with the halter still in his hand, and the mare was gone. The prince was in despair, but suddenly he remembered the promise the little fish had made him. He took out the scale which he had been carrying all this time, and rubbing it gently, he cried, "Little fish, if friend indeed, help me in my time of need." Immediately the little fish stuck its head up from a stream nearby.
"What can I do to help you, brother?" it asked.
"Can you tell me where the black mare has gone?" asked the prince.
"Yes, she's changed herself into a fish and is hiding down in the stream with us. But do not trouble yourself about that. Just strike the halter upon the ground and call out, 'Black mare,
Black Mirror, come out from among the fishes, for it is time to go home.
The prince did as the fish bade him, and as soon as the black mare down in the stream heard those words, it was obliged to come out and take its natural shape again. The prince then mounted upon it and rode it home. When they reached the stable, the old gray woman was on the watch, and she could scarcely hide her rage and disappointment at finding the serving lad had managed to bring the black mare home. However, she bade him go to the kitchen and get his supper, and she followed the black mare to the stall.
"You fool!" she cried, and she was ready to beat it in her rage. "Why didn't you not hide among the fishes as I bade you?"
"Mistress, I did," answered the mare, "but the fishes are friends of the lad and told him where I was, so I was obliged to come forth."
"Tomorrow, change yourself into a fox and hide among the pack. There he will certainly be unable to find you."
After that, she went into the kitchen where the lad was eating his supper.
"Well," she said, "you've done very well so far, but tomorrow is still another day. Now we will see how things go then."
On the morrow, the prince rode the black mare out to pasture, and again he sat on her back so that she should not escape him. After a while, he fell asleep in spite of himself, and when he awoke, he was sitting astride of a branch with a halter in his hand. At first, the prince did not know what to do. He was in despair. Then he remembered the promise the fox had made him. He took the hairs and rubbed them between his fingers. "Little fox, if friend indeed, help me in my time of need," he said. Immediately the little red fox came running out of the wood.
"What would you have of me, brother?" he asked.
"Can you tell me where the gray woman's black mare has gone?"
"That is easily answered. She has changed herself into a fox and is hiding with the pack. Strike the halter on the ground and call out, 'Black mare, come from among the foxes. It is time to go home.'"
The prince did as he was told, and as soon as the mare heard him calling to her in this way, she was obliged to come out from the pack and take her real shape, and the prince mounted upon her back and rode her home. When the witch saw him riding back to the house, she ground her teeth with rage. As soon as she had sent him to the kitchen, she went out to the black mare's stall to beat it.
"To the foxes! To the foxes! That was what I told you!" she cried.
"Mistress, I did hide among them as you bade me," answered the mare, "but this lad is a friend of the foxes too, and they told him where I was."
"Then tomorrow, hide among the wolves," said the old woman. "He will certainly never look for you there."
The next day it was the same thing over again. The prince sat on the mare's back so that she should not escape him. After a while he went to sleep, and the mare slipped away from him. But this time it was into a wolf she changed herself. When the prince awoke, he was in despair until he remembered that he still had one friend to help him. He gently rubbed the hairs the wolf had given him and said,
"Kind gray wolf, if friend indeed, help me in my time of need."
Immediately the wolf came galloping out of the wood and asked the prince what he could do for him. The prince told him how he had been set to watch the black mare and had gone to sleep and lost her. "And now," said he, "I fear there is nothing for me but to lose my head and have it set upon a post."
"That will not happen yet," answered the wolf. "The mare has changed herself into a wolf and is hiding with the pack. Strike the halter on the ground and call to her, and she will be obliged to come."
The prince did as he was told and called to the mare to come, and she was obliged to take her real shape and come out to him. The prince slipped the halter over her head and sprang upon her back and rode her home. When the old gray woman saw him coming in this way, instead of upon his feet, she almost burst with rage. However, there was no help for it. The lad had earned his wages, and have them he must.
"And what is it you will choose?" asked the old gray woman.
"Give me the poor nag that stands in the furthest stall," said the prince. "It is but a sorry-looking beast, but I will be content with that," answered the prince.
When the old woman heard that, she turned green in the face. She offered him first one and then another of the handsome horses in her stable, but the lad would have none of them. The sorry nag was his choice, and it alone would he take, and in the end the old woman was obliged to give it to him. He rode away on it, and it was not the old gray mother's blessing that went with him.
When they were well out of sight of the house, and in the depths of the forest, the prince alighted, and taking out a curry comb he had brought with him, he began to rub and curry the horse. And when he had done that, it shone like burnished silver. Then he mounted again and rode on until he came to the dragon's castle. As soon as he drew near, the princess came running down to meet him, for the dragon was away, and she had been watching from a high tower and had seen him coming. He took her up upon the saddle before him and turned his horse's head and rode away from the castle even faster than he had ridden toward it. And they had journeyed far before the dragon returned home. As soon as he reached there and found the princess gone, he knew what had happened. Then he said to his horse, "Shall we follow after them now, or shall we eat and drink first?"
"We have no time for meat or drink now," answered the black horse, "and it will be all I can do to overtake them, for now they ride my own brother."
Then the dragon leaped upon his horse, and off they flew faster than the wind in pursuit of the prince and princess. They went on, and after a while the dragon came within sight of them. For though the white horse was swifter than the wind, he carried double, and so could not go at his highest speed. Nearer and nearer came the dragon and his steed, and the prince began to beg and plead with his steed to go faster. But it answered, "There is no need of that, master. Only leave everything to me, and all will go well." Then the black horse came near enough to speak, and he called after the other, "For mercy's sake, go slower, brother. I shall kill myself running after you."
"There's no need of your doing that," answered the white horse. "Throw up your heels and rid yourself of the monster that sits upon your back. You've been his servant too long as it is."
When the black horse heard this, he began to plunge and kick up his heels, so that the dragon was thrown from his back, and falling upon a rock, he was broken to pieces. But the black horse came up to his brother, and the prince set the princess upon his back, while he himself kept the white horse to ride. So they all journeyed back to the pleasure palace together. And when the six sisters saw them, there were great rejoicings. And they all lived together happily in the palace forever after. Please join me next time for another enchanting story here on Tales of Wonder. Thank you.
Thank you.